Thank you. Thank you for having me, and you can never be too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish radio show and podcast with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, Rabbi's guest is Otho Eskin, author of the new book, Black Sun Rising. And we'll have a visit from Tom Price, our expert on the international Jewish scene. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I have to relate a funny incident we experienced at our daughter's preschool, or early childhood education center, that is, last year, at this exact time of year. Our daughter, Ayala, goes to a Jewish institution and a more or less Jewish preschool, even though many of the kids and teachers there are not Jewish. As the month of October progressed, we received notices that Halloween wasn't celebrated at our preschool and that we weren't to send our children in costumes, nor would there be any type of encouragement of jack-o'-lanterns or pumpkin carving or any of that sort of thing. Halloween, you see, is not a Jewish holiday, the notices said, and there are plenty of Jewish holidays to celebrate in the fall. Now, I'm comfortable with all of that, although I don't have any strong objections to Halloween as it's celebrated in America. As kids, being the children of a cantor and the grandchildren of a rabbi, we carved pumpkins and dressed up in costumes and trick-or-treated in our old neighborhood and gave out candy just like everybody else. We even decorated the house a bit. When my own children, the older ones, were little, we would have costumes and go trick-or-treating, unless October 31st happened to fall on Friday night, as it does this year, and then we would go to Shabbat services first and trick-or-treat with them after, or perhaps the other way around, depending on the timing of Shabbat services. I don't really have strong negative reactions that some rabbis do to what is really a pretty innocuous festival, even if it has had terrible results for American teeth. I mean, free candy. How can you possibly convince kids that it's not a good idea? In any case, our preschool now forbade any kind of Halloween celebrations, which was fine with me, since we've just finished that long run of Jewish fall festivals from Rosh Hashanah through Simchat Torah. Plenty of holidays. Good. Let's emphasize Judaism, right? Sounds good. And then, just before Halloween, we received a note in our kids' cubby that we should figure out what we wanted our child to bring to put on the Dia de los Muertos altar in the hallway for the Day of the Dead. Wow. So Halloween, admittedly based on All Hallows' Eve, but basically a night to dress up and get candy and hear Monster Mash on the radio, is not okay in a Jewish setting. But altars dedicated to dead relatives for a Mexican Day of the Dead ritual, a kind of combined Christian and pagan celebration that includes giving people sugar candy skeleton heads, is not only acceptable but encouraged? Exactly how does that fit in a Jewish preschool? And why was that pagan, Christian, ghoulish altar ritual allowed, while Halloween was identifiably not acceptable? Well, all of that brings me to comment a bit about assimilation, the gradual subsuming of Jewish identity into the American melting pot that's been going on for a long time, but seems to be proceeding at rapider and rapider pace. Look, it's easy to disappear as a Jew in America. Just stop going to synagogue. Don't join the shul. Don't wear a yarmulke. Don't celebrate Jewish holidays. Don't observe Shabbat. Don't study Jewish texts or Jewish subjects. Don't worry too much about Israel or anti-Semitism. Most Americans, after all, are a mix of ethnicities, and lots of them don't have a strong sense of religious or ethnic identity. In general, we Jews can pass in America, particularly if we don't do anything Jewish. If you are listening to Too Jewish right now, and obviously you are already doing more to demonstrate your Judaism than lots of American Jews do regularly. So, to change that a bit, I'd like to encourage you to make a choice this Friday night that many of you might not otherwise make. Instead of celebrating Halloween, which falls Friday, October 31st, take the time to go to Shabbat services at a synagogue near you, like my own congregation, Beit Simcha. We don't have altars dedicated to the souls of dead relatives. Instead, we have living Judaism, energetic, active, warm. We always have goodies to eat after services. No, not Butterfingers, no sugar candy skulls either, but tasty stuff nonetheless. And we, like all Jewish congregations, are delighted to welcome you to an evening of music, meaning, and inspiration. And of course, friendship. It's not the Day of the Dead. It's a living reminder of the vitality of Jewish identity and holiness. It's Shabbat. Try it this Friday night. In that spirit, not spirits, spirit, to play us in this morning, here's 613's Lecha Dodi, an all a cappella version for Shabbat, the song of welcome for the Sabbath bride. That was 613 singing Lecha Dodi for the coming of Shabbat this Friday night. Join us, Congregation Beit Simcha, 6:30 p.m. for a great celebration of the Sabbath, much better than whatever else you might be doing October 31st. We'll return in a moment on to Jewish. Our guest this morning will be Otho Eskin, author of the new book, Black Sun Rising. He's a longtime member of the diplomatic corps in the State Department, influential in a variety of international treaties, but he's gone in quite a different direction, writing terrific thrillers. Meet him when he joins us in a moment on To Jewish. We are delighted to welcome to To Jewish our guest this morning, Otho Eskin. Otho has written a really terrific thriller called Black Sun Rising, a Marco Zorn novel. He is a graduate of Bowdoin College and George Washington University Law School, served in the military, joined the U.S. Foreign Service, where he spent more than 20 years. And, well, he's done a whole lot of stuff at a very high level and then devoted himself to writing some really terrific books. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning.
So what turned you towards fiction writing?
Well, after I retired from the Foreign Service, after 20-some-odd years, I needed something to do. I knew I needed to be active, mentally active, and I tried a variety of activities, including learning to fly a plane and taking up piano lessons, which did not turn out a brilliant success, but I enjoyed them. But I knew all along that I want to try my hand at writing. When I was in high school, I loved writing, and I wrote short stories, some of which were published in minor publications. So when I was free from the Foreign Service and the daily toil of a career work, I decided to try my hand once again at writing. And I started writing plays, and I have wrote about half a dozen, I suppose, some of which have been produced in Washington and New York and in London and elsewhere. But then I thought, well, I've done that. I've tried my hand at that. That was enjoyable. I'd like to try a different, slightly different form of writing. So I decided to take up genre novel writing. So that's what I do. It's basically thriller novels, and I have a splendid time doing the writing, and it keeps me alert and on my toes and keeps me busy, which is what I want to do.
So where did the idea for Marco Zorn come from?
Well, that's a good question. You'd have to ask my psychoanalyst, I suppose. I knew I needed to have a protagonist, and because of the type of novel I was going to write, I decided I wanted to place him in Washington, D.C., because that's the city I've grown up in, that's the city I know best, and I wanted to have him engaged in and called into get involved in crimes, and being a police detective was the obvious choice. I didn't want to have just a normal citizen because getting made involved in sabotage and espionage, because it never struck me as totally believable. But then beyond that, I needed to make Marco Zorn distinctive. I wanted him to make him a very, very good, very smart, but not your usual guy.
Not a super secret agent. A
detective, policeman. I wanted him to have sharp edges. So he does some things that are kind of ethically questionable, but he has a very, very strong moral compass. And when he gets involved in a case that he believes in, he pursues that the case for as long as it takes until he achieves his end. So that was the kind of outline of the figure I needed to have. And so I built the Marco Zorn around that structure, that superstructure, if you will.
We will talk much more with our guest, Otho Eskin, about his book, Black Sun Rising. We come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a terrific array of services, classes, and events this autumn. Established 7 years ago by wonderful congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy Progressive Congregation in Northwest Tucson and the Foothills. Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests. Call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Religious school is available for school-aged children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, our Torah Tikes experience for the littlest kids, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with wonderful Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services for Shabbat celebration are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Onig Shabbat. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., preceded at 9 a.m., with a wonderful Torah study, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading it. Our Facebook page, where you can go to services, is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. All of our services held in person are also by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. Access them by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha to come to services, religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com, T-O-O, JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you're listening. Those comments all help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So we talked a little bit last week about the Caucasus, Azerbaijan, and Armenia, which brought up the question of what are sometimes referred to as frozen conflicts around the world. Can you define that for us and help us understand it a bit?
Sure. The key thing is it's a very misleading term because things that are frozen can quickly defrost, especially in today's dangerous world. And tempers can flare, and any one of these frozen conflicts could erupt into World War III. So you have to keep a careful eye on them. And an example, other than the one between Armenia and Azerbaijan that's been going on forever and sometimes erupts into heated warfare, and sometimes it just like simmers on the back burner. I'm not sure it's ever been completely frozen, but these are conflicts that are intractable. People try to negotiate truces and build peace, and it's like two sides that are fundamentally opposed. Some would say, like, Jews and Arabs in the region in and around Israel, that that's a frozen conflict, but certainly hasn't been frozen recently.
No, it's been pretty hot, hasn't it?
For the past 2 years,
yeah,
sure, and intermittently over the past 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a regional conflict, which people sometimes misunderstand. I mean, it's...
Right.
It involves
well, they
a
all
lot of
are,
countries.
In a way.
Yeah.
The one I was going to focus on for, like, instructive purposes is the conflict between India and Pakistan over Kashmir, or Jammu and Kashmir.
Right.
Which actually is regional because there's territory that's in dispute between China and India in the exact same region. So you really have three nuclear powers, two of which have an overwhelming majority of the world population between them, India and China, and Pakistan. And there's a part of the old Jammu and Kashmir that the Pakistanis refer to as Azad Kashmir, which means free Kashmir. The Indians call it POK, Pakistan Occupied Kashmir. So even in their referral to the same piece of land, the lines are drawn, the trenches are there, and there are soldiers who spend their lives freezing on top of a ridiculous glacier called the Siachen Glacier, which may or may not mark the border between India and Pakistan, depending on who you ask. So this is a conflict that pure...
Well, that is truly a frozen conflict at that point.
Right. Xiachen is like at the top of the world. But it's a crazy thing because I've gone to Azad Kashmir, so-called pre-Kashmir, and, you know, the people running it are Pakistani Muslims. And I've been in Indian Kashmir where the people running it are Hindus. There's not much difference on the ground. In fact, you know, the richest and most populous province in Pakistan and state in India is Punjab. And I recently had an Uber driver here in town from Punjab, and he was from the Pakistani side, but he said, you know, there's really no difference. Our weddings are the same, our rituals are the same, our ceremonies are the same. Only our religion nominally is different. It was a very interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And he's got refugee status because he belongs to a group of Muslims that are considered heretical by Pakistani authorities, some tiny Muslim sect that you may never have heard of. But I was aware of it only from my time in Pakistan. But this particular frozen conflict could at any moment involve the two most populous countries in the world with huge armed forces and almost limitless manpower resources. So it's discouraging, actually, that people are so much more willing to make war than make peace. We're educated certainly in Western educational systems, for competition and basically for fighting and war making and not for peace building. So until that changes, what we do on the playground is cooperate rather than compete. There's going to be conflicts around the world, and we'll just be lucky if they remain frozen.
Yeah, it's weird to hope that conflicts stay cold, but
right,
that's the goal. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to that.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Daniel and Rivka are celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. Mazel tov. To celebrate, their son Aaron invites everybody they know to a huge golden wedding anniversary celebration. During the evening, Aaron gets emotional every time he hears his dad call his mom with such terms as darling, petal, sweetheart, honey bunch, my lover. It's clear to Aaron his parents are still, after 50 years, very much in love. When his mom goes out of the room, Aaron goes over to his dad, kisses him, and quietly says, Dad, I'm so pleased for you. It's fantastic. After 50 years, you're still so much in love. You still call mom by all those loving pet names. His father's a little embarrassed, and he says, Aaron, to tell you the truth, things are not always what they seem. I forgot your mother's name 5 years ago. That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week special feature of Too Jewish Just For You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Lech Lecha, which includes God's great commandment to Avram, Abram. Lech Lecha me'artzecha me'moladetcha me'beit avicha. Leave, go from your country and your homeland and the house of your father to a land I will show you. This is the beginning of monotheism, of the belief in one God. It's the beginning of Judaism. It will prove to be the beginning of our connection to the land of Israel as well. A dramatic, powerful moment. You know, the fascinating thing about Lech Lecha is not that God commands Abram, later to be renamed Abraham, to leave everything he's known. After all, in order to create a new religion and remake belief in our world, he will need to leave polytheism and the pagan society that doesn't recognize the concept of supreme justice and divine power. It's a corrupt, dishonest, ethically failing civilization. In order to live a life of goodness and blessing, sometimes you have to leave home. Abraham picked up and left the sophisticated, morally challenged city-states of Babylon and the Fertile Crescent. He journeyed outward in order to find God and to found a new religion. That journey of differentiation was pivotal to all human history. If Abraham doesn't just do what God commands, leave, there is no Judaism. No, nor Christianity, nor Islam, nor monotheism, no Western civilization as we know it at all. But what's most fascinating about Abraham's actions in this week's Torah portion of Lech Lecha is that after God commanded him to go, he simply went without argument or controversy. That strikes me as a very un-Jewish approach. After all, the essence of Jewish culture is argument and discussion. If you were directed to leave everything you'd ever known and told to move somewhere unspecified, wouldn't you at least complain a little bit? And please don't think that Abraham is incapable of arguing with God. In fact, he proves in next week's Torah portion he will argue and bargain with God to the last degree, as he does when trying to defend the few righteous people of Sodom and Gomorrah. No, something else is at work here. The essential understanding that we all have, that sometimes you just have to move on. Leave what you know. Embrace the journey. In order to fully realize who we can become, we must first leave who we have been. It's an exciting, exhilarating, and daunting prospect. Dangerous, yet essential. But if we choose to take the first steps away from what is wrong and towards what is right, we, like Abraham, may reap rich rewards. When we return in a moment on To Jewish, our guest, Otho Eskin, explains how he developed his protagonist, a DC cop named Marco Zorn, who solves neo-Nazi conspiracies using his wits. Find out all about it when we come back in a moment on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Vice President of the United States J.D. Vance denounced a vote by Israeli lawmakers that would advance West Bank annexation. He called it weird and personally offensive in comments as he departed Israel after a 2-day visit aimed at shoring up the Gaza ceasefire. in part in order to increase pressure on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, right-wing lawmakers signed off on two bills related to annexation last week in an early stage of the legislative process. Most members of Netanyahu's own Likud party boycotted the votes. The bills are not likely to advance to become law. President Donald Trump had said annexation of the West Bank is off the table in his view. He seeks to solidify peace in the region and secure additional relationships between Israel and Arab nations. Vice President Vance said he was told the Knesset vote was purely symbolic, which he said he did not understand. If it was a political stunt, it was a very stupid political stunt. I personally take some insult to it, he said. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is replacing Vance in Israel now, a couple of weeks into the U.S.-brokered truce in the Gaza War, amid questions over just how durable this ceasefire will prove to be. Trump's plan said it aimed to create a credible pathway to a Palestinian state. Portions of the West Bank would certainly be an expected component of any Palestinian state. Marco Rubio also criticized the annexation vote in comments he made to reporters. They're a democracy. They're going to have their votes. People are going to take these positions, Rubio said. He added, we think it might be counterproductive, a much more sane approach than Vance's. Trump's stance on the issue received new clarity last week when Time magazine published the full transcript of its interview with him, published in part earlier this month. Asked what the consequences would be if annexation moved forward despite Trump's instruction to Netanyahu not to allow it, the president said the cost would be steep. It won't happen. It won't happen. It won't happen because I gave my word to the Arab countries, Trump said. You can't do that now. We've had great Arab support. It won't happen. I gave my word to the Arab countries. It will not happen. Israel would lose all of its support from the U.S. if that happened. In other news, in Britain, the BBC will be required to air a statement correcting its coverage after the UK media watchdog Ofcom sanctioned BBC for failing to identify the narrator of a Gaza documentary as the son of a Hamas official. Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone, aired on the BBC back in February. It drew fire quickly for being one-sided against Israel. Critics identified one of the narrators, all young people, as the son of Hamas's former deputy minister of agriculture. Trust is at the heart of the relationship between a broadcaster and its audience, particularly for a public service broadcaster such as the BBC. This failing had the potential to erode the significantly high levels of trust audiences would have placed in a BBC factual program about the Israel-Gaza war, Ofcom wrote. The media regulator also added that the BBC's breach of its broadcasting code resulted in its audience being materially misled. As a consequence, the BBC is required to air a statement of Ofcom's findings during its broadcast. The film, produced by an independent production company, Hoyo Films, follows three young people navigating war-torn Gaza. It's emerged as a central exhibit for those who believe the BBC is biased against Israel. Well, I mean, of course it is. The BBC said Hoyo had not disclosed the relationship of one of the narrators, Abdullah Al-Yazouri, prior to screening. The documentary was pulled from distribution following the revelation about Al-Yazouri's family ties. Several months ago, an internal BBC review found it had breached an editorial rule on accuracy, but concluded there was no evidence Hamas inappropriately impacted the program. According to this internal review, conducted by Peter Johnston, the BBC's director of editorial complaints and reviews, a little over $1,000 was paid to Al-Yazouri's sister for reasonable production-related expense. The Ofcom ruling is in line with the findings of Peter Johnston's review that there was a significant failing in the documentary in relationship to the BBC's editorial guidelines on accuracy. The BBC said in a statement, "We've apologized for this. We accept Ofcom's decision in full. We will comply with the sanction as soon as a date and wording are finalized." Look, when defamatory and anti-Israel propaganda is disseminated, these later retractions and apologies do little to remove the terrible impact of the lies in the initial material. Still, we do appreciate all efforts to hold people to account for their anti-Israel, and in the case of the BBC, anti-Semitic bias. Speaking of anti-Semites, a fellow named Paul Ingracia has pulled out of contention for a top legal role in the Trump administration after losing key Republican support over revelations of private texts in which he declared, "I have a Nazi streak." Ingrassia, who is all of 30 years old, has faced criticism over his links to the avowed white supremacist, well, the neo-Nazi, frankly, Nick Fuentes, and the anti-Semitic influencer and rapist, Andrew Tate, ever since his nomination in May. But the January 2024 texts showed that he personally used slurs against black people, called for the abolition of the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday, and expressed affinity for Nazism. Ingrassia announced he will not appear in the Senate as planned last week. He indicated he will, however, keep his current lower-level role in the Trump administration. He's a lawyer. "I will be withdrawing myself from Thursday's hearing to lead the Office of Special Counsel because, unfortunately, I do not have enough Republican votes at this time," Ingrassia said. Four Republican senators, including Senate Majority Leader John Thune, publicly expressed opposition to Ingrassia's nomination after the revelation of the private, kind of pro-Nazi texts this week. They included both racist and anti-Semitic content. "I'm not supporting him," Florida Senator Rick Scott told reporters. "I can't imagine how anybody can be anti-Semitic in this country. It's wrong." Well, I can imagine it. An attorney for Ingrassia said they appeared to be jokes, but a participant in the chain said they were not treated as jokes at the time, and the Nazi comment in particular, "I do have a Nazi streak in me from time to time, I will admit," had drawn pushback from others on the chat. Ingrassia's text's revelation came just after the organization Politico exposed private chats among state-level leaders of the Young Republicans, in which multiple members expressed racist and anti-Semitic views, including the sentiment, "I love Hitler." Several participants in that chat lost their jobs. Republican leaders in two different states have dissolved their state youth organizations as a result. Vice President J.D. Vance said the text represented youthful mistakes. He was not worried about pro-Hitler views among young Republicans. Of course he wasn't. And finally, Rabbi Arthur Waskow, activist and author of more than 24 books that refracted progressive causes like civil rights, economic injustice, and climate change through the lens of Jewish text and tradition, and a past guest of Too Jewish, Arthur Waskow died last week at the age of 92. May he rest in peace. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews Round the World. Welcome back to Too Jewish. Our guest this morning, Otho Eskin, who's had an extraordinary career, long time in the U.S. Foreign Service. He was involved in negotiations on the U.N. International Conference on the Law of the Sea, the International Space Station, the Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. Really, he's been a playwright. His new book is called Black Sun Rising. It's a Marco Zorin novel. So we talked a little bit about the fact that you created Marco Zorin as a D.C. homicide detective, but not a CIA agent. So that's a kind of a choice. He's not FBI. He's not CIA. Why didn't you go with something, one of those agencies?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And when I was beginning to think about writing this book, a CIA agent was certainly one of the options that I considered. The reason I didn't do that is I didn't want to limit myself to espionage and spy thrillers. I think a CIA agent can be very an exciting protagonist, but I wasn't writing espionage or spy novels because I wanted to not limit myself so that I could include practical crimes, various kinds of plots to overthrow the government, and any kind of variety. I felt that a police detective had the maximum credible exposure to all kinds of crimes. So that was why I ended up not using a CIA agent or Secret Service agent or anyone or a number of other possible protagonists.
So the story is about a neo-Nazi group. That's the Black Sun issue. How did you do your research for that?
Well, there was well, we all know from reading the newspapers that there are neo-Nazis floating around. They're on the internet, they're in books and articles. They didn't take much of imagination to come up with an organization. In fact, there was a real organization called the Black Sun. It probably still exists in some quarters. And it was established at the end of World War II, and it was intended to revive the Nazi Reich after the loss by the Nazis of World War II. And using that as kind of a foundation, I sort of imagine, okay, so supposing these people decided to get themselves really organized, and the key to this, to their organization, is they discover a weapon that was constructed by the Nazis at the end of World War II, and which was to be, would have been a super weapon, but for reasons that are explained in the novel, but aren't relevant to this conversation, weren't used. The weapon was buried in Berlin, and then of course the war, the end of the war, the city of Berlin was basically destroyed, and the weapon was covered in rubble. But by accident or semi-accident, it is discovered just very recently, and a neo-Nazi group gets its hands on it and decides they're going to use this super weapon to achieve their aims, which is to reconstruct and reinstall a Nazi Reich, in this case, in the United States. And that's what my protagonist is faced with.
So poison gas makes a significant appearance in the book. How did you decide to include that? It's Zyklon B, right, which was used in the gas chambers.
The gas is called Zyklon C, and Zyklon B was used in the camps by the
right.
Nazis.
Right.
And I wanted it to resonate. So most people may not know about Zyklon B, but a lot of people will. And I want it to be a terrifying weapon, even though the camps, of course, are long since gone and wouldn't be used. But the man who developed this Zyklon C, this gas, was an employee of IG Farben and was part of the tradition of chemists who were developing these poison gas weapons to be used by the Wehrmacht in the World War II. He does not come to a good end, but he was not based on a real person, but based on a prototype of a number of chemists who worked for Farben and I suppose other chemistry chemical companies.
It's a complicated plot. I think a lot of
more complicated.
How did you? Do you like know where you're going with this? Do you plot it all out in advance, or does it just kind of write itself?
Well, it's hard to say. I always know where to begin. I know where the opening scene is going to be, what it's going to be, and I know what the closing scene is. I know where it's going. I know who's going to be involved. But the in-between part, which is the bulk of the novel, I work out as I go along, and I'll start writing a chapter and get my protagonist, Marco Zorin, into some kind of fix, and then he has to get out of it. And if I can't figure a clever way of getting him out, I rewrite that chapter. So much easier than in real life. So, yes, I was working out. I have a certain number of key characters that I know are going to be involved from day one, and I incorporate them bit by bit, and they play their part and are disposed of as necessary. So if that answers your question, I hope.
I think it does. Marco Zorn is a different kind of detective. We're used to people that shoot and carry all kinds of weaponry, are engaged in battles, and that's not how he succeeds. Tell us how you develop that aspect of his character.
I wanted to have him at least some different from other detectives. One of the things is that he does not carry a weapon. It's not a political statement so much as a personal, having to do with an event in his childhood. And you don't know in the earlier books, you just know he doesn't carry a weapon and he doesn't like guns. And when he gets into a difficulty, which he often does, he's usually able to outsmart his opponents. But you never know quite why. The police department from which he works really does not like it that he's not carrying a weapon, because he's going to get in trouble, and he does get in trouble, but he manages to get out of it, and he uses his wits, and you don't know until the end of the book, in this book particularly, why he doesn't carry a weapon. He doesn't like guns, and he needs to use his brain rather than firepower.
I think Marco Zorn would make a good character in a movie. Have any of these books been optioned yet?
I'm waiting for the phone to ring, but no, it hasn't been optioned. Although I wrote it in a style which I like to think would be very compatible with movie or a TV series, because I the way I break the novel up, you have a lot of quick scene changes, which movies and TV can do, and which I deliberately employed with the hope that might be an attractive feature. But so far, no one has chosen to pick up on it.
Is there a particular neo-Nazi group that you modeled Black Sun after?
Not other than the fact that Black Sun is and was a Nazi group, and it's still around. But no, this is a very generalized concept on my part. I'm not basing it on a specific group or a specific person. It's entirely fabricated out of my imagination.
In deciding how to finish it, do you ever think about sort of adding a little cliffhanger for the next book?
Oh, yes, I have thought about that, and it appeals to me very much, but I didn't want to make it too blatant. In a sense, I do leave cliffhangers, because some of the worst people in the story are still at large, and you know they're going to come after Marco Zorn, or alternatively, he's going to come after them, and they're very dangerous people. So in a sense, I dangle that out for the observant reader who wonders what happens to some of these characters.
As I recall, there are three books now that are Marco Zorn novels?
Well, yes. I'm working on one right now, and yes, definitely another one is in my head, being written as we speak. Well, not literally, but I expect to submit it to a publisher in the next couple of months.
So we know what you're working on, and we know what's coming out next too.
Well, yeah, we have the title Day of Wrath.
That sounds rather biblical.
It's totally different. No, it's not political at all. It's not had nothing to do with the Nazis or World War II or a secret weapon. It does involve Marco Zorn as the protagonist and a number of the other characters that appear in my earlier novels.
So I have to ask you a question away from the novels and your writing. Otho is not a name that I have heard very often.
Well, no, it's an unusual name. It's a family name on my mother's side. There were Othos in every single generation for going back to the 18th century. I'm the last Otho. I don't know why we have it. There was a Roman emperor named Otho.
Right.
I think it's basically a German version of Otto, or an English version of the German name Otto.
Otto.
How I inherited that name, I don't know. And I've wondered that all my life.
Well, it's a clearly distinct name. Otho Eskin, I want to thank you for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people find out about Black Sun Rising and about you?
Okay, well, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. I'm always happy to promote the local bookstores.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Tim Rubin, the Jewish author of the new book, Tequila. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha this Friday night and any Friday night. Services and Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush. In person and on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli pop singer Yoni Bloch, and it's an interesting story. He released this song, Sof Tov, A Good End, 9 months ago, using AI to show the hostages returning home to tremendous joy and relief with tears of joy. Well, the song became wildly popular in Israel, and now Yoni Bloch has updated the video of the song, replacing the AI-generated images of reunion and joy with actual video of the Israeli hostages coming home and genuine scenes of celebration throughout Israel. It's really terrific. My friends, may you enjoy a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
נתחיל עם סוף טוב ונלך אחורה בזמן נפרסם תמונות ברחוב של כל מי שהחזרנו משם נתחיל אחרי שיש כבר שלום ורק נשאר לסגור כמה פרטים נזמין את כל תושבי הצפון למסיבת שפיות ברעים נתקע כל בוקר בפקק נראה חצי שעה חדשות והופעה של ברונו בפארק נוכל לטוס לאן שנרצה ואז לחזור הביתה כי נגמר אם מישהו ישאל מה קורה נגיד לו שעכשיו כבר
מה שהוא אחד יסתדר ומה
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.